Good morning. This is the KABU Morning News for Tuesday, July 4th, 2006. I'm Brian Smith.
And I'm Chris Andre.
Coming up on this morning's news, the first of four hearings on whether to build a liquefied natural gas facility on the Oregon coast expects to draw opponents and proponents. Cindy Sheehan and anti-war demonstrators will spend Independence Day at a vigil in Washington, D.C. And the CIA is shutting down its special unit tasked to track down Osama bin Laden. Portland area weather, partly cloudy this morning, especially on the coast and in the valleys, and a chance of thunderstorms later, temperatures in the mid-80s to low 90s. Tonight, partly cloudy, evening thunderstorms in the Cascades, and lows in the 50s. And the quote for the day, we can have a democracy, and we can have great wealth concentrated in the hands of the few, but we cannot have both, Justice Louis Brandeis.
The first of four hearings on whether to build a liquefied natural gas terminal in Coos Bay is expected to draw strong criticism from opponents who do agree with the supporters that it could have a significant impact on energy affordability, the economy, and the environment. The proposed terminal includes a 223-mile pipeline that would cross four Oregon counties into California. The Federal Energy Regulatory Commission and the U.S. Coast Guard are hosting four meetings from Coos Bay to Klamath Falls as the agencies prepare a lengthy review of the project's safety and environmental issues during the next several months. Because of a change in the law, Oregon officials will not make the final decision on where to locate the terminal. In the past, both the Federal Commission and the State's Energy Facility Siting Council would have had to sign off on the location. But the energy bill approved by Congress and signed by Bush last year stripped that authority from the state and left it squarely with the federal government. Oregon still could halt the project if land use officials determine it doesn't conform to coastal zoning laws, but the terminal's developer would have the opportunity to revamp its design to meet state standards.
And a federal judge issued a temporary restraining order yesterday barring the Navy from using a type of sonar allegedly harmful to marine mammals during a Pacific wartime exercise scheduled to begin this week. The order comes 3 days after the Navy obtained a six-month national defense exemption from the Defense Department, allowing it to use mid-frequency active sonar. Environmental groups had sued to stop the sonar use during the exercises off Hawaii. The sonar portion of the war games was set to start Thursday. U.S. District Judge Florence Marie Cooper wrote in her order that the plaintiffs have shown a possibility that RIMPAC 2006 will kill, injure, and disturb many marine species, including marine mammals, in the surrounding waters of the Hawaiian Islands.
Governor Ted Kulongoski has joined a lawsuit against the Bush administration charging that the federal government has failed to adequately address damage by nuclear contamination to natural resources around the Hanford Nuclear Reservation. The other plaintiffs in the lawsuit are the state of Washington, the Yakima Nation, and the Nez Perce tribe. The governor said that radioactive contamination does not respect state lines and must not be allowed to continue to leak into the ecosystem. Attorney General Hardy Myers filed a complaint at the request of Governor Kulongoski. The state of Oregon and other plaintiffs are natural resource trustees with significant interests in the assessment and cleanup of contamination at the Hanford site. The Hanford site in Washington has impact on Oregon. Thousands of Oregonians live within 50 miles of it. Oregon Indian tribes exercise treaty fishing rights in the Columbia River. Virtually all shipments of radioactive material in or out of the Hanford site travel through Oregon. This from the Oregonian.
And from the Salem Statesman Journal, more immigrants are joining crews to fight forest fires, even though the work, which pays $10 to $15 per hour, is dirty and backbreaking. According to a recent report by the Inspector General of the U.S. Forest Service, half of the estimated 6,000 private firefighters in the Northwest who are contracted to state and federal governments are immigrants. It's not known how many of those are undocumented. Debbie Miley, the executive director of the National Wildfire Suppression Association, a group that represents more than 200 private sector fire contractors, said that contractors are encouraged to oblige by state and federal hiring laws. In Oregon, the Oregon Department of Forestry, which administers the contracts with private sector fire crew contractors, under the agency's contract agreement, private contractors are required to check the legal status of their crew members. Undocumented immigrants have been fighting wildfires for the past several years.
Firefighters battled to contain a 60-acre wildfire at the weekend on land 8 miles east of Estacada in the Eagle Creek area. It was 50% contained by early evening. Nearby homes did not appear to be threatened, and the fireworks appear to have started the fire in a pile of brush left behind when the land was logged a few years ago. A helicopter and an air tanker dropped water and retardant as crews from the Forestry Department and the Estacada Rural Fire District cleared a fire line to slow the fire. Crews planned to work through the night.
And Bend resident Sharon Banks has found her mission in life, busting soot and greenhouse gases from diesel engines. Helping truckers on the Interstate 5 corridor install fuel-saving equipment, she figures to reduce annual carbon dioxide gas emissions by 220 million pounds by the end of next year and save 10 million gallons of diesel fuel a year in the process. The former Lane County official says that's just the beginning. She hopes to outfit 100,000 long-haul trucks on I-5 and then take on the remaining 500,000 trucks that crisscross the nation. Banks runs Cascade Sierra Solutions, a new three-state nonprofit created to help truckers get technology to cut their fuel use, such as attachments to trucks that reduce wind drag. The U.S. Environmental Protection Agency recently gave Banks' new agency $200,000 to set up a program for Washington, Oregon, and California. The U.S. Department of Transportation and the Oregon Energy Department gave her $5 million total to lend to truckers to buy power units and streamlining packages. Her work in the new nonprofit agency will help extend a five-year-old program of the EPA called Smart Way.
It's long been known that people in their early 20s don't vote in large numbers, but an analysis of Oregon's May primary election shows that the number of age of indifference now extends to those in their late 30s and early 40s. Barely one in four registered voters in their late 30s and early 40s voted, and voters aged 30 to 35 were no more likely than registered 18 and 19-year-olds to cast a ballot, according to the analysis by the Oregonian. Voters older than 57 cast ballots at twice the rate of voters in their 20s, 30s, and 40s, playing an enormous role in deciding the nominees for governor and other races on the ballot. The sharply different turnout rates were revealed in Oregon's first statewide voter database created this year by a federal mandate in the 2002 Help America Vote Act. The database lists all registered Oregon voters' addresses, party affiliations, and track records of returning ballots. The database makes clear that older Oregonians wield disproportionate political influence compared with their presence in the population.
Stephen Green, a former private first class from the Army, was charged with rape and murder of an Iraqi girl in Mahmoudiya, Iraq, during March of 2006. Green is said to have used chemicals to set the girl on fire to cover up the rape. Three members of the girl's family were also killed, allegedly as part of the incident. If convicted, Green could face the death penalty. Four other soldiers have been confined as a result of this investigation, and all soldiers under investigation in this case belong to the same unit as the two soldiers who were kidnapped and beheaded in Iraq last month, this according to Ross Story.
57% of Americans say they are extremely proud to be American, 25% saying they are very proud, according to the latest Gallup News poll. There has been some change in this variable over time. The percentage of Americans indicating they were extremely proud to be American increased in 2002 after 9/11 and remained at its 2002 level through 2004. It's fallen back since then. In January of 2001, 55% of Americans were extremely proud. That figure shot up to 65% in 2002. Ultimately reaching a high point in 2003. It remained high in 2004 and began another decline last year. It's now essentially back where it began at 57% extremely proud. This from Ross Story.
And Britons have never had such a low opinion of the leadership of the United States, a YouGov poll shows. As Americans prepare to celebrate the 230th anniversary of independence today, the poll found that only 12% of Britons trust them to act wisely on the global scale. This is half of the number who had faith in the Vietnam-scarred White House of 1975. Most Britons see America as a cruel, vulgar, arrogant society, driven by class and racism, crime-ridden, obsessed with money, and led by an incompetent hypocrite. American troops are failing either to win the hearts and minds in Iraq or bring democracy to that country. More than two-thirds who offered an opinion said America is essentially an imperial power seeking world domination. And 81% of those who took a view said President George W. Bush hypocritically championed democracy as a cover for the pursuit of American self-interests. A spokesman for the American Embassy said that the poll's findings were contradicted by its own surveys. This from the Telegraph.
The U.S. Navy's top commander in the Gulf told Reuters yesterday that the threat of an al-Qaeda attack from the sea remains an absolute concern and could intensify as operations on land are countered. Since the September 11th attacks on the United States, governments and security experts have repeatedly voiced fears about the vulnerability of the maritime industry, which carries more than 90% of the world's traded goods. Vice Admiral Patrick Walsh, who is in charge of U.S. Naval Forces Central Command, said, "I don't think there is any question that as we thwart their attacks and disrupt their operations on land, that we should expect them to turn to the sea." Walsh said al-Qaeda, which is well known to have a maritime arm, was very adept at blending into the maritime environment. He said al-Qaeda has shown its capability a number of times in the past with a series of high-profile marine attacks, while many others have been foiled. Walsh said he was very concerned about the role al-Qaeda had played in the energy sphere and its intention to disrupt global energy markets. This from Reuters.
And in today's edition of New Yorker magazine, Seymour Hersh says that inside the Pentagon, senior commanders are increasingly challenging the president's plan for Iran. Hersh writes, "The generals and admirals have told the administration that the bombing campaign will probably not succeed in destroying Iran's nuclear program. They also warned that an attack could lead to serious economic, political, and military consequences for the United States. A crucial issue for the military's dissent," the officer said, "is the fact that American and European intelligence agencies have not found specific evidence of clandestine activities or hidden facilities. The war planners are not sure what to hit." Senior officers in the Pentagon do not dispute the president's contention that Iran intends to eventually build a bomb, but they are frustrated by the intelligence gaps. The military leadership is also raising tactical arguments against a proposal for bombing Iran, many of which are related to the consequences for Iraq. Attacking Iran could heighten the risks to American and coalition forces. America's allies in the Gulf also believe that an attack on Iran would endanger them.
The Bush administration said yesterday that it plans to sell Pakistan up to 36 advanced F-16 fighter jets built by Lockheed Martin in a weapons package that could be worth more than $5 billion. The proposed sale of 18 new Fighting Falcon fighters with an option for 18 more demonstrates the United States' commitment to a long-term relationship with Pakistan. The State Department said it was part of a drive to broaden strategic partnerships with Pakistan and advance U.S. interests in South Asia. The new aircraft would be used for close air support in the U.S. declared global war on terrorism, among other things. The agency responsible for government-to-government arms sales said the fighters could be worth $3 billion if all options were exercised. Once notified, Congress has 30 days to block such a sale. It's not expected to do so in light of Pakistan's strategic importance to the United States. Washington has offered India a chance to buy F-16s or Boeing FA-18s in Super Hornet strike fighters as part of a deal that could cement a sea change in U.S.-India ties since the end of the Cold War. Lockheed Martin, the Pentagon's biggest supplier, said the proposed sale to Pakistan could mean an extension of the F-16 production line beyond 2009. This according to Reuters.
California Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger has ordered the release of intelligence reports prepared for the State Office of Homeland Security. A move administration officials say will quell complaints that California engaged in widespread monitoring of political protests. State lawmakers have complained that two Homeland Security intelligence reports from March and April carried details about the location and purpose of political rallies. The reports were obtained by the Los Angeles Times and detailed in an article published Saturday. The governor's Homeland Security Director, Matthew Bettenhausen, said the rally information was mistakenly included in the reports by a private contractor working for his office, but some officials complained of overly aggressive information gathering by Schwarzenegger's administration. Schwarzenegger will allow reporters to view about 60 intelligence reports prepared for the Homeland Security Director. Officials said they will first remove law enforcement-sensitive information and information about ongoing investigations.
More than a dozen grandmothers from New York who were arrested last October in Times Square joined peace activist Cindy Sheehan for a march and rally in Washington. The women joined Sheehan, Vietnam War era Pentagon whistleblower Daniel Ellsberg, and human rights advocate Dick Gregory for a short march to a statue of Mahatma Gandhi on Washington's Embassy Row. They gathered in Lafayette Park across the street from the White House last night to begin a hunger strike designed to energize the peace movement. About 20 supporters of the Washington-based group Free Republic gathered under a banner that read, "Cindy Sheehan Starving for Attention," near the Gandhi statue, while some held American flags. Protesters have pledged to maintain a daylight vigil across Pennsylvania Avenue from the White House through August 14th, when Sheehan and other activists plan to shift their protest to a site near President Bush's Crawford, Texas ranch. Sheehan said, "We're going to be there every time he goes on vacation until the troops come home or he's out of office."
Mexico's political future is poised on a knife edge with two candidates, a pro-business conservative and a charismatic left-winger, both claiming victory in the presidential election while the electoral authorities insist the results is too close to call. A preliminary tally of 96% of ballots cast on Sunday put Felipe Calderon on the governing center-right National Action Party, PAN, less than 1% ahead of the former Mexico City mayor, Andrés Manuel López Obrador, of the Democratic Revolution Party. The country's top electoral officials said this was not enough to declare a victor and announced that an official recount would begin tomorrow. Calderon was not prepared to wait. In an interview with On the Biggest National Television Network yesterday, the 43-year-old Harvard-educated lawyer insisted his triumph was irreversible, adding, "Let's realize that the electoral campaign was hard-fought and competitive, but now it's over." In a similar interview, populist López Obrador reiterated his conviction that he had won.
President Evo Morales of Bolivia's supporters failed to win control of an assembly that will rewrite Bolivia's constitution, leaving him no choice but to compromise over his ambitious plans to empower the indigenous majority and boost state control over the economy. Morales' allies won 132 seats in the 255-person body on Sunday, far short of the two-thirds majority they needed to push through their leftist agenda, according to unofficial results. In a separate ballot question with potentially explosive results, voters in four of Bolivia's nine states overwhelmingly chose greater political and economic autonomy for their states. Each state voted independently on autonomy and was not affected by the outcome in other states. Sunday's vote was a critical test for Morales, an Indian elected in December on promises to wrest political control of South America's poorest nation from a corrupt political class and more evenly distribute the nation's wealth. Morales began by nationalizing the natural gas industry on May 1st. Compromise could be difficult for Morales, whose government has so far used decrees to advance some of its goals, such as nationalizing the natural gas industry.
And Israel has rejected a deadline by Palestinian militants believed to be holding an Israeli soldier in Gaza to begin freeing Palestinian prisoners. This from the BBC. Militants gave Israel until 3 o'clock Greenwich Mean Time today to release some 1,500 prisoners or face unspecified consequences. But Israeli Prime Minister Ehud Olmert said he would not give in to extortion. Palestinians said missiles hit Gaza twice early today, killing one militant in northern Gaza and striking the Islamic University in Gaza City. The first strike killed one militant and injured another in the town of Beit Lahia. 2 hours after a missile strike on Gaza City hit a building of the university, a stronghold of Hamas group. The nighttime strikes came after Israeli artillery pounded northern Gaza on Monday, and a small force entered the area for the first time since Israel began its assault last Tuesday night. Israeli aircraft also hit more targets across Gaza, and two militants were reported killed. 8 militants have now died since the start of the offensive.
The CIA says efforts to hunt down Osama bin Laden are as strong as ever, despite a report that the agency has shut down its specialized unit that hunted for the al-Qaeda leader and his top lieutenants. The New York Times reports 24 analysts in the unit were reassigned to other counterterrorism duties late last year. Officials tell the newspaper the move came amid growing concern in the agency about al-Qaeda-inspired groups carrying out attacks independent of bin Laden. But officials stress that finding the elusive terror leader remains a high priority. The recent book, Ghost Wars, says some in the CIA were uncomfortable with the unit, saying its zeal for capturing bin Laden took on a cult-like atmosphere. A former senior CIA official who once headed the unit tells the Times that the move reflects the view that bin Laden is no longer the threat he once was. But he says that view is mistaken.
The powerful Islamist movement in Somalia has distanced itself from comments about Somalia attributed to al-Qaeda leader Osama bin Laden. An internet audio recording warned the West not to send troops to Somalia. But a leader of the Union of Islamic Courts, which has taken control of the capital, Mogadishu, said they did not rely on any outside group. The U.S. has accused one Islamic leader, Sheikh Hassan Dahir Alwais, of links to al-Qaeda and involvement with terror. Alwais denies the U.S. allegations, saying the case against him was built by enemies from within Ethiopia. Speaking to reporters in Mogadishu, Sheikh Sharif Ahmed, also a figurehead of the Islamic courts, said bin Laden was expressing his personal opinion in the audio recording, which has not been verified. Somalia's Islamists have regularly denied harboring al-Qaeda fighters in their ranks. This from the BBC.
Western powers are reactivating their efforts to punish Iran through possible UN Security Council sanctions unless it suspends uranium enrichment and agrees to talks on its nuclear program. The deadline is July 12th. The envoy spoke just 2 days before a key Iran-European Union meeting in Brussels is meant to make clear to the Iranians that their time is running out. Tomorrow, senior EU envoy Javier Solana will urge top Iranian nuclear negotiator Ali Larijani to commit his country immediately to suspending enrichment and starting negotiations. Diplomats also said Russia and China were closer than ever to supporting the West on UN Security Council action, including sanctions, if Tehran refuses the package of incentives meant to wean it off enrichment. Still, they suggested it could take some time to secure total commitment to sanctions from Moscow and Beijing. A European official outlined more realistic expectations, saying Larijani would likely come back with questions and perhaps a counterproposal.
And a senior Cuban official has sharply criticized a U.S. report on the future of Cuba after Fidel Castro leaves office. A draft of the report calls for a democracy fund to boost opposition to Cuba's communist government. This from the BBC. The report is being issued by the Commission for Assistance to a Free Cuba, by President Bush in 2003. Cuba's government has had notoriously bad relations with Washington for well over 45 years. For the government, the fact that the U.S. would plan for the day when Fidel Castro's time in power ends should come as no surprise. However, the president of the Cuban parliament, Ricardo Alarcon, feels there is cause for anger and even concern. The official described the report as nothing short of an aberration which should be read as an act of war, as it publicly contemplates how to bring the government of a sovereign foreign nation to an end. The report calls on President Bush to create an $80 million pro-democracy fund to boost support for political opponents of the island's communist government. It also says that Cuba, along with its political ally Venezuela, is a threat to political and democratic stability in Latin America.
Birds that migrate long distances have adapted to the world's changing climate in unexpected ways. As the planet warms and spring arrives earlier in Europe, birds are being forced to change their migration patterns. It had been thought that birds travelling long distances from Africa to Europe would be unable to adapt. But a study in Science suggests they have evolved in response to climate change and are returning earlier. The need for migratory birds to coincide their arrival at breeding grounds with plentiful food supplies is a known evolutionary pressure. Scientists had assumed that birds travelling short distances would be better able to adapt and arrive earlier for spring because of similar climate conditions in their nearby winter grounds. But researchers in Europe decided to test the theory using long-term banding and observational data from Scandinavia and Italy dating back to 1980. The study revealed that long-distance flyers have adjusted their migration habits to arrive earlier in northern Europe in time for the start of spring. This suggests a more permanent change in migratory behavior due to climate change than has previously been thought. This from the BBC.
And does dancing in a circle decked out in ancient garb in the dead of night while banging a tambourine constitute a crime? This is a question many of the leaders of the Greek Orthodox Church have been forced to ask as a realization has dawned that Apollo-loving pagans are among us again. Last week, an unexpectedly large horde of pre-Christian devotees descended on Mount Olympus for the annual Prometheus Festival. Their arrival might have gone unnoticed had it not been for the fact that there were 4,000 of them dancing in the wood-encircled meadow halfway up the mountainside. Even worse, for Greeks who take their church and nationalism very seriously, a large number came from distinctly foreign fields. The pagans from Canada, the UK, and Europe heartily sang ancient Orphic hymns dedicated to the glorification of the summer solstice. This year, despite fierce protests from the Orthodox Church, pagans were allowed to set up a cultural association. Now they want to take their battle on the ancient temples of Greece in the hopes of one day having their religion officially recognized.
This has been the KBOO Morning News for Tuesday, July 4th, 2006. Thanks for listening. Today's editor is Chris Andre. Our engineer is Steve. Kathleen Stevenson is the KBOO AM News and Public Affairs Director. I'm Chris Andre.
And I'm Brian Smith.
We clear the air at 90.7 FM in Portland, 91.9 in the Columbia River Gorge on translator K246AA, and 100.7 in the Willamette Valley on translator K220HR. If you'd like to volunteer in the AM newsroom, call Kathleen Stevenson at 503-231-8032 extension 202 or email us at amnews@kboo.org.